like to welcome you all to this last of the what on today's weather we laughingly call the summer seminar series of the Digital Classicist. I suppose since this is the last of these meetings, I guess I should mention the organisers, Simon Marnie from UCL, Juan Garces, British Library, Melissa Terrace from UCL, and Gabriel Bodard from King's, and I've mentioned myself from King's as well, I suppose, in the Centre for E-Research. I think it's been a tremendous series covering a huge range of material in lots of different areas of the digital classics, and I think, you know, it's been really great, the ones that I could see, the ones that I could come to, certainly. Just the sort of usual plug for the recent publication that has come out of the 2007 series, the Digital Research and the Study of Classical Antiquity, edited by Simon and Gabby, a series of presentations, again, on a number of subjects in this area. Since this is the last seminar, I'm not going to say anything about next week's, because there isn't one. So I'm going to introduce our speaker for this afternoon, who's Linda Spinazze from Venice, a doctoral student from Venice, whose presentation is going to be, how do you pronounce that? Is that Francisca Dioca, Developing New Features, Manuscript Tracing on the Net. And while Linda's speaking, I'm going to send around this attendance sheet, if you could all fill that in, please. Thank you. Linda.
Okay. First of all, thank you for the invitation. I'm very grateful to be here to present my project to you. I came from Italy, near Venice, and I'm currently a doctoral student at the University Ca' Foscari in Venezia. Well, my project unfolds as a three-year doctoral program called Ecdotica Digitale, which translates as Classics and Textual Criticism with Digital Support. The program is presently being integrated into a larger and more important project, Musisque de Oque. This project is a PRIN. The acronym PRIN stands for National Interest Research Project, and it's sponsored by the Italian University Scientific Research and Technology Ministry. As you see, there are five Italian universities involved in this project. Allow me to briefly outline the concepts of this presentation. The first part of my presentation describes the institutional project, its purposes, methods, and organization. I will explain you the philosophy of the project and the workflow. Then, I'll show you the site and its functionalities. Then, in the main part of my presentation, I will talk about Conspectus Codicum in particular. I am illustrating the problems, and I am going to propose the new features in order to link Musisque de Oque tables of codices with the web resources. Lastly, I'll try to answer to a key question. I'll explain the strategy to reduce the amount of time required to repeat searching for the resource updating. Musisque de Oque, a digital archive of Latin poetry, available at mqdq.it, was created at the end of 2005. Its purpose is to create a single Latin poetry database supplemented and updated by exegetical tools. The classical texts found in books are typically the result of editorial choices. As an audience of experts, you all know that there are no such thing as a unique text of classical authors. What we find rather is the result of an intrinsically dynamic tradition immobilized by the reconstruction of its textual hypothesis. Hence, the fluid historical context of the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, times when copyrights didn't exist, are revisited only in the textual notes. With the arrival of information technology, the main collection of the classics, along with their existing resources, were transferred into digital formats, allowing for quicker lexical searches. The literary corpora are the collection of frozen texts to which I made reference earlier. The philologists that use digital corpora actually don't search within a corpus of text, but within a corpus of Vulgate version of text, whose results must be verified through the printed edition. This is necessary in order to verify that the retrieved text is attested on every manuscript, either in the Codex Optimus, in a scholium, or in the indirect tradition, etc. Yet even today's search engine inquiries in a literary database are limited to providing only the results of a keyword inside of an authoritarian text. The one exception, you know, is the American project presently underway at Tufts University, which uses the idea of multi-text on the source generation collections. At the moment, the Musisque Deoque team have given up the idea to create a multiple digital diplomatic edition, even if it's the most popular approach at the moment. There are presently about 20 operators scattered around Italy that revise, proofread, and create the digital Musisque Deoque editions, a sort of collaborative environment for variant annotation. The primary goal of Musisque Deoque is to overcome the limitation of a lexical search into collection of canonical texts. Musisque Deoque would like to permit an individual to locate the chosen forms quoted from the reference edition, as well as the variants proposed in the critical apparatus, into a very large corpus of text. In fact, the present scope of the project deals with the acquisition of large amounts of minimal textual note information based on the largest number of authors. The project then focuses on the eventual results obtained by the search engine in order to cover the highest possible range of authors and works of Latin poetic corpus. The Musisque Deoque team aims at giving a minimal apparatus of particularly significant variant. For example, here I have done a collage to demonstrate the efficiency of the searching into the Musisque Deoque collection. The key words put in the box are Dixti Juvat. When we do the search, we obtain as a result the verse with another junctura in the text, Dixti Satis. But when I pass the cursor on the red words, it appears a label with the variant we have searched, Juvat. In order to obtain more information about, we have to click on the red words in the abbreviation of word. In the first case, we can consult only the note of apparatus. In the last one, we can consult the text plus apparatus. You can see that the reading Juvat is witnessed by a very ancient codex of 9th century, Tueanus. This is the text and the apparatus note. But I return about this representation a little later. From this example, you can see how the Musisque Deoque search engine will offer its user the possibility to immediately obtain given knowledge about the accomplished tradition from ancient work all the way up to humanism and the Renaissance. The addition of apparatuses to the digital critical edition is performed through manual insertion by qualified operators that adapt the actual information of the original apparatus to the digital schema. This is the front-end operator platform used by the operators. The only essential requested fields are the following: the text of the variant or the conjecture, that is, the reading, and the indication of the codex or the scholar's name edited the text, the sources. As you can see, the source is chosen from a table. Also, this table is built by the operator during his work. Today, the Musisque Deoque site offers a complete online collection of Latin poetry from its origins to late antiquity. The database is revised and updated through the addition of new critical apparatuses for each single text. The following results are presently available: 600 poetic Latin texts, over 344,000 verses, almost 105 revised verses, which is about 30% of the total, and slightly more than 2,400 variants, 134 revised and annotated works. The final result of a Musisque Deoque edition, or I should say the final user interface, presents itself in this way. On the left-hand side, you have an example of a text. In this case, we are using Horace's second poem in the second book of Epos. Notice the blue boldface words, Agri Sextulit, at the end of verse 18. When I click on those words, on the right-hand side of the screen, you find the variance of that pattern with an indication of the witnesses. When I put the cursor over the sigla, a little label with an explanation appears. In this case, the abbreviation, the Greek letter phi, corresponds to Codex Parisinus Latinus 10310. Alternatively, you can immediately know the corresponding text by taking a glimpse under the table. In fact, underneath the line you can consult the Conspectum Siglorum, which appears just as in the paper edition of a reference text. In this section, in fact, you can also have some information about the reference basis text, in this case Klinger edition 1959, and you can see also who edited the Digital Musisque de Oque edition. Operators editing the apparatuses for Musisque de Oque have to follow some guidelines. For example, there is a list of philological abbreviations for words used in apparatuses, such as del for the levit, or om for omitted, con for coniecit, and so on. And they must use a common frame to be able to quote Latin classical works uniformly. But there are no rules for the building of the Conspectus Codicum. This issue has been strongly perceived within the group, but at the end it has been decided that every operator should follow the indication as found in the reference basis text. A solution which opens up further problems already highlighted by Christeller in 1963 in his preface to Iter Italicum. Christeller lamented over the occult signs of shelf mark lore, emphasizing that many researchers didn't care to ascertain the shelf mark of the manuscript that they quoted. In some cases, the editors recycled information from previous editions without checking their references, thus sitting a manuscript with a shelf mark in disuse for centuries. Well, in a database so vast and large, where different individuals provide revisions and updates of texts with minimal apparatuses, difficulties emerge with regards to coherence, consistency, and the citation of the codices in particular, to use a philological term. Here, I have collected three different abbreviation lists to show you the incoherence between more digital editions stored in Musisque de Oque. We therefore have a series of Conspectus Codicum that translate the sigla with the Latin name of the city, for example, Codex Bernensis, in another case only Bernensis. Or for Harley collection of British Library, we can find Codex Harleyanus, or more specifically, Londiniensis Harleyanus. What's more, there is another problem about philological jargon. I'll try to explain better. In this slide, I collect other different Conspectus Codicum to demonstrate to you the difficulty to understanding the Latin philological name of certain codices. Who knows what Vigorniensis stands for? Maybe some archivist or some expert of Statius in particular. Vigorniensis means from Worcester. Valesternianus is another incomprehensible name, like as Redigerianus, which refers to a manuscript stored in the Rediger collection preserved in Wroclaw University Library. Finally, for some scholars, it's possible that for some scholars, which coming from old school, in my opinion, Codex Mellicensis sounds better than Melk, Stift's Bibliothek, but in my opinion, even if less Latin, the last one is more understandable. However, while in the traditional paper edition the reader can refer to the introduction or the preface to have more information to trace the origin of the witness manuscript, in our simple list there are some abbreviations identifying some other insignificant names sometimes. Hence our Conspectus Codicum, plain and simple. Perhaps it isn't that lucid, so we'll make some clarifications. We thought of a solution that saved the work of operators, our digital editors, and the philological classical charm of Conspectus Codicum in traditional philological use. To find a solution to this problem, we initially imagined a definitive representation. We want that every Musisco de Oque user can know simply which manuscript the digital edition uses. In order to comprehend which data and in which way this information could be added, we applied some ideas to a sample of a Musisco de Oque edition, supported by simple tools. The authors used in the experimental application are the following: Arator, Boetius, Horatius, Juvencus, Maximianus, the tragedies by Seneca, and Achilles by Statius. For the most part of the last month, I've been working on implementing, with the Musisco de Oque team, some experimental features to test the idea of satisfactory presentation. Luigi Tessarolo, the main software engineer of Musisco de Oque, designed a friendly interface for me by using a pre-existing database of manuscripts built according to Kristeller standard. He did this in order to help me to translate the philological name of codices into a contemporary manuscript reference in Kristeller model, city, library, collection, shelfmark. This is the back-end tool. On the left-hand side, you can see the original Musisco de Oque table, which is built by Operator. And then, in blue boldface font, you read the translated codices in new term. For example, Melicensis 177 becomes Melk Stift's Bibliothek 177. The red sigla BM that you can see at the end of the line stands for the links which I have discovered for this codex. In this case, information about library, B stands for biblioteca, that is library, and I've also linked the codex with a web page devoted to specific manuscript. M stands for manuscript. The E codex has the abbreviation BF, because on the net there isn't a specific detailed page for manuscript, but there is the digitalization of volume that describes the fund. F stands for unit, collection, fund. Otherwise, in most cases, as you can see, there are only the link at library. There are a lot of B alone. This type of table helps to expedite the insertion of new data, that are the new denomination and the linking. And it helps the automatic creation of new dedicated windows for the visualization of manuscript information. The HTML visualization of this transformation is the example we are looking at. The manuscript interested by linking and new denomination have a little end, like a manicula. By using the mouse, we can read a little label that explains the location of the codex. Etoniensis 150 becomes Eton from Eton College Library 150. Instead, if we click on the name of the codex, we obtain a new window. In this new window, the manuscript appears with the new denomination. As you can see, the sigla have disappeared, and we can find two sections, links and testi, that stand for works or authors. In this image, I will call your attention to the list of authors that share the same witness manuscript. This Etoniensis 150 is a miscellaneous parchment codex dating back to the 11th century. This manuscript, written in Beneventan script, cites not only Arator, Maximianus, and the Achilles of Statius, but also Theodulus and Ovidius, Remedia Amoris and Heroides. At the moment, these last two cited authors don't have the revision and the update of apparatus in the Musisco de Oque corpus, but we can easily adjust the reference with our system in the event that the Conspectus Codicum of Theodulus would cite this codex, as Delta probably using the Osternacher edition of 1902. Thus, our codex Etoniensis will be adequately linked through the back-end table that we have yet seen before. In this new window, I will call your attention to the links that are listed. Here, as opposed to the last slide, we can see three active links. The first one regards the library, the second the collection, and the third one regards the shelfmark. We can in fact obtain some different classes of information about a witness manuscript on the internet. These links open in a new window an external link with the library storing the manuscript. You can have some useful information about library organization or contact. Oftentimes we can only know where the library is and who has some information about the manuscript, as in the example shown before of Etoniensis. The reference to the library is the unique type of linking for the most of our codices. The link about collection connects the user with some specific information about the collection, history, organization, and sometimes list or digitized volume containing description of fans and single manuscripts also. Lastly, we link to specific shelf mark refers the user directly to information about specific codex or to the digitized manuscript. In my opinion, this last type of link should be recognized as a small qualitative leap for a resource such as Musisque de Oque. What's more, the link between cultural initiatives increases visibility and reciprocal promotion. In short, the main goal of my specific project within Musisque de Oque is the improvement of communication between online manuscripts and Musisque de Oque. As you all know, there is a lot of noise on the net, and the resources are being updated day by day. The libraries and other cultural institutions are working every day to preserve, protect, update, and increase the value of their archives. There are many libraries devoted to increase the service of reference online, and at the same time they are committed to offer virtual access to their collections. The dissemination of digital technologies has strongly influenced manuscript culture as well as all other fields of information and knowledge. This well-known fact was recently discussed during the fourth conference of the LIBER, Manuscript Librarian Group in Rome. There are some guidelines to managing the process of conservation and translation of concrete items into new digital forms. Unfortunately, we can't refer to a unique standard since there are too many standards in addition to several approaches to building a digital special collection and so on. There are several ways to tag the metadata as there are multiple choices for the protocol of communication through the web servers. On the internet we can find some sites that compile sources from different libraries. For example, the catalog of digitized medieval manuscripts by UCLA or the portal of the CERL, Consortium of European Research Libraries. The two examples work only with digital objects deriving from different and restricted groups of library collections. The point that I would like to make, therefore, is the following. How can I find a newly digitized and uploaded manuscript online as opposed to a source already listed as available? How can one manage link updates? How can I search automatically for new entries? How can I reduce the amount of time required to repeat searching for the resource updating? My feasibility study on the proposed solution is following these steps. Select special digital collection of particular interest, acquire the protocols used by them, implement a meta search engine prototype based on relevant sample. My work in the standardization of manuscript nomenclatures and linking into the group of tables of manuscripts from seven authors has involved about 215 different codices. In this sample, there are only 39 links, each devoted to a different single manuscript, of which 27 link to information pages about the single codex. Only 22 links provide the digital image of the manuscript, which might lead you to the conclusion that there aren't a lot of digital manuscript collections online, as I noted earlier. As a matter of fact, there are many digital collections involving the codex aspect, with the purpose of highlighting the artistic value of a manuscript rather than emphasizing the textual witness of the tradition. Libraries tend to obtain more funding for digitalized artistic impact manuscripts, and the fact is also quite understandable. For example, the British Library presently has an online digital collection devoted to illuminated manuscripts, so so, in the British Library online catalogue we can only find some information for codices that interest us, since they haven't been digitized yet. In any case, our sample isn't too wide, so I guess that through the course of work, when I'll increase the sample, I'll find new collections that I didn't have the possibility of citing in this part of the study. In these 22 examples of digitalized manuscripts, there are 7 from Plutarch Collection, 6 from Leiden Project, 3 from München Bibliothek, and also 3 from eCodices Project. The last left 3 codices come from 2 others' collections, but for the moment we decide to consider only the first 4 collections. In fact, in the total of this little sample of manuscript, 215, I know that there are at least 3 manuscripts stored in Munich Library, 2 codices from Leiden Library, 2 from Swiss Libraries, and 1 from Plutarch Collection that they aren't digitalized now, but that probably they will in the next future. Well, these 4 collections are going to constitute the first object of my meta-search engine study. I will quickly go over the selection of collection now, in order to determine which metadata and which protocol are used. Plutarch Online is the ambition digitalization project of the entire Plutarch Fund preserved in the Medicea Library in Florence, about 3,900 manuscripts. The site presently offers about 2,318 digitalized codices. By using the official report of the project, we can determine that the metadata used for the description are XML-MAG and the protocol for the web service is OAI. The digital collection managed by University of Leiden is a multi-purpose project which relies a largely digital library comprehensive of many various digital objects about cultural heritage. In particular, the collection of Western medieval manuscripts amounts to 2,500 specimina. The digitalization, of course, is in progress. From the information edited in the site and from the software that they use, that is DigiTool, distributed by Exlibris, we can determine that the project uses the descriptive metadata, the EAD schema, and the protocol is OpenUR. The collection of Latin manuscripts in Wenker Digitalisierung Zentrum is also in progress. The metadata used here is Dublin Core Standard and the protocol is OpenUR, managed by SFX, a sophisticated system for managing digital library implemented by Exlibris too. Finally, eCodices Virtual Manuscript Library of Switzerland is a collection developed by the digitalization of the entire medieval fund of St. Gallen Bibliothek. It has been extended to all manuscripts reserved in the Swiss libraries. At the moment, the online collection has 639 digitalized manuscripts tagged with TEIP5 schema. In the documentation, we find no information about the standard protocol for web service retrieval. In fact, a technician there has confirmed that the passage through the OAI protocol is in progress. This means that at the moment an automatic resort in their metadata database wouldn't be possible because their server doesn't provide a public access. So, from this quick overview you can understand the 2 main points. The acquisition of the manuscript in digital form is in progress. The lack of a unique standard, both for metadata and for protocol. Fortunately, the libraries in the last years usually integrate their resources with the standard, and in our case the 2 standards are quite common and based on XML language. Even if our prototype focuses upon 4 digital collections only, the protocols to harvest the metadata are 2, OAI PMH and OpenUR. In order to move with the times of developing collection, it is necessary to check the collections again and again. For this reason, there is the need to create an updating well-formed list of manuscripts. I'll call this list Standby Manuscript List. Since the descriptive metadata are different in every collection, I will have to create also an XML schema in order to interpret in the appropriate way, either by using the tag or the string structure recommended and used in each different protocol. With this new well-formed list, I should simultaneously consult the four different databases. But in order to realize this, I have to be able to access over four different web servers that use different message formats. So I must implement a sort of meta search engine using a web service software. I am evaluating which is the best. Actually, I am studying Web Search and Description Language, WSDL, the RESTful Architecture, and SOAP. After solving the problem of access to metadata information of every library collection, there is the question about the query. In order to find my main interest information, it has the shelf mark, we will need to put the current query at every different metadata schema, and we will obtain, like as a result, an uniform resource identifier. I've been working on this project for several months. In the beginning, I attempted to devise an original protocol. However, after considering the many internet protocols already in use, I changed my mind. Hence, the challenge lies in creating new strategies to manage different web protocols together and different types of metadata tagging. This is why I am devoting myself to the implementation of this meta search engine within the several months. The basic idea for the creation of this backend tool is to reduce the amount of time required to search for the resources to update. In the future, if the model works, it could be applied to all libraries linked, quoted in Musisque Deoque, and it will implement a totally automatic research of manuscript on the web. In this way, I will be able to enrich more simply the Musisque Deoque Conspectus Codicum. In fact, I can automate the update of linking process. Here, you can have some minimal reference. In order to obtain more information about the development of my project, you can contact me. Or if you are interested in developing of site on the technical support of Musisque Deoque, you can write to info@mqdq.it or contact directly the software engineer at his email address. Thank you for the attention.
Okay, thank you very much, Linda. I should just say before we move into questions, I should have said at the outset, microphones will remain live during the questions, so just bear that in mind. Okay, floor's open.
It's an interesting academic problem, isn't it? It seems to me that if you have a manuscript and you've digitized it, your obligation is to send that information out. That you shouldn't be having to do this hunting work. You shouldn't be having to develop these dogs to go out and find manuscripts.
Yeah.
Because the manuscripts should all be standing there waving, saying, look, I'm here. They should be looking for people who want them. That you're on a hunting expedition, which libraries should be making unnecessary. Isn't that right? The people who are responsible for the publication of primary data, I think, have an obligation to try to make that primary data go out and find its users. Is that right? Or is this the way to start, because you have to go out anyway to show that there are people who want it? Are we taking our data and saying to everybody, here it is?
I think the issue is, as Linda was saying, that there's not a single standard making this stuff available. So a lot of these repositories and publishers have their manuscripts available online, as you were saying, but they make that available via different standards. Mm. They do publish the metadata, but some of them publish, you know, TEI, some of them publish EAD, some of them publish all sorts of other formats, and that's why you need to go out and get them. If it was all in a single standard, then Google would have it.
Don't they offer feeds to which one could subscribe? Shouldn't they be doing a sort of super Twitter?
Not necessarily a single standard, because it's saying until a single standard comes along.
Like natural language, can't any standard be changed into another standard?
Yeah, but that's why Linda is having to do this work.
No, I understand.
Going out and finding it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Any putting something new online, you put it in several standards. If that's
that, indeed.
I don't know. I like to think.
But it just seems it should be integral.
Yes.
It should be an integral assumption. I mean, I know that when everybody started to do this, nobody realised it was going to be quite like this. I mean, obviously, it's understandable. And everybody knows that there should be one standard, but it should be the one they use. I mean, that's everybody knows that there is should only be one standard, and mine is best. And that's the problem one's dealing with, isn't it? But I was wondering more about the conversion of material into, as it were, a message format. The conversion of that material into a feed format from different standards might be achievable, but then it seems to me that it should be being pushed at you rather than pulled by you.
Yeah.
In the perfect world.
I think anything more basic than that is to find an agreed way of naming an object.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, Codex Arianus, Harley manuscript. You know. So people come to the BL and they want Oxyrhynchus platyrus, so-and-so. We don't officially have them under those names. We have them under a different inventory name. Or somebody else looks for the band Homer, or Homer T, which happens to be Bernie 86. So I think the basic underlying decision, and I think in a way it's up to the archiving institutions or libraries to say, well, these are sort of the names that give them. And in a way, it will be independent of any standard. It will be a sequence of characters that say,
yeah,
well, this is that manuscript, that entity. And
I mean, that implies that each specifically could be sort of classes of names, so to speak. Well, I'm trying to think of, instead of each individual thing having a separate name, you could have some kind of listing. Divisions which whole groupings can be. I mean, I was very impressed with your color coding, and I know that go on, it's really your topic, but I think color coding helps in these things a lot. Yes, but I don't suppose there's a standard color coding for presentations.
But you see, I mean, I don't think people are as much interested in, say, collecting the Harley collection as in very specific manuscript. They happen to have the text, they're doing an edition.
Some people are, but some people are not. Some people are interested in all the various different paper manuscripts you have. Some people are interested in all the manuscripts of a particular date. So there's no single entry point. People want lots of different ways in.
That's the point, yeah.
And there's the interesting interface, isn't there, which was exemplified by your manuscript that contains several different texts. So that it's this one-to-many kind of relationship, isn't it? And some of these medieval manuscripts are full of masses. It might have 30 different kinds of things. And engaging, I mean, that's where the person thinking about the text over here and the person holding on to the actual object over here need to decide how that meshing works, don't they? Because you may want that person there to tell you that the significance of your manuscript is this or that.
Yeah.
And it's how do we make that conversation happen?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with Gabby that the unique naming is not an issue only of a manuscript. So it might be a text. Text will understand. Like, how do you search for, say, all manuscripts that have Homeric texts, say, and that would be different from that to Arabic, and that's the problem. Even the same text would be different. You would have to search different strings to verify that. But I think that's even more basic than an exchange protocol or a format that allows you to exchange data. It's to say, well, some basic inventory of names on which you can build.
It's interesting there, isn't it? Because the source of the naming of bits of text is the textual scholar. So that's where this interesting meshing happens. That the textual scholar comes in and says, that bit at the top of that page of that manuscript is the thing that I call this. So one of the questions about naming is who names what? Trying to find a cumulative way of naming the elements within. You know that it's number 1, 2, 3, because that's how you find it. But the source of knowledge about the contents in that manuscript has accumulated from lots and lots of different scholars, haven't it, over the years?
One of the other issues that I was reading something this afternoon, completely unrelated to this topic, but the principle still applies, and it was to do with the marketing and the development of Android phones as opposed to iPhones. And it's to do with user study, the usabilities, and what the consumers actually want. As I say, the manuscript studies is not my area, digitalization publication manuscripts is not my area, but it seems to me, exactly as you were saying, Charlotte, that somebody has an idea, somebody's got funding, money to digitize these manuscripts, and they do it in the way that they want to do it. They don't actually go out and ask a community of people who are going to use it, what actually would you like? And this brings us right back to the Android, my friend Google, who became very, very successful accidentally because they developed a better algorithm than Yahoo and everybody else. But once they started making money, the way they've hung on to the market is by user studies. What do our customers want? Which is why they fiddle around with your iGoogle and all the cool stuff in your Google Mail every now and again, because they're tracking what we all do, they're finding what the users want, and they're adjusting it. We've got a whole bunch of collections, and you're sitting there in the middle, Charles is drawing them all together, because they're not talking to their user communities and the people that want to use these for research, and asking them, hey, how would you like these? It's sort of like, it's a bit, I don't know, it might be too fascistic, is it then determined?
With one honourable exception, that asking users.
But I don't know, when you embark on a large manuscript digitalization project, do you go out and do consumer studies? You do,
Like
clearly all these other people don't.
Yeah.
It might have, I don't know. I mean, but I agree with you. I mean, the central question would be what do you need as users, as researchers?
And of course you don't know, we've been having this conversation with a project we're just starting about trying to have a user an analysis, but until you've created the resource, people don't know that they want it. I mean, that the steady increase in the digitization of manuscripts is changing assumptions that we're making about textual editing, and it's happening as it happens, isn't it? That as this process advances, and I think the Homer multitext is going to really underline that people's assumptions about what an apparatus criticus should be is just changing.
Yeah.
It's no good to say, well, I, the great scholar, say that this is this, full stop, end of story. There's this very subversive possibility of going right back and seeing what was actually there.
Can I ask a question to Linda?
Yes.
If I may, you said for you personally. Are you saying we have a situation where different institutions make their manuscripts, in this case, available under different protocols according to different standards, metadata according to standards, and you might be solving the problem by creating something which allows you to search across all these standards.
Yes, across the internet, cross searching,
yes.
Because I think it's it isn't simple, because also the portal of CERL, the Consortium of European Research Library, doesn't work very very well. sometimes for my research, I must go to the site of the library to find what I, so it's quite difficult.
how do you find out whether a manuscript has been digitized or not? How do you go about it?
Yes, I visited every library.
Basically, you don't send out...
No. I visit every site. Sorry.
So you don't send out a script. You go to the website.
Sorry?
You don't send out a script, a search script, go out and find you the string.
At the moment, no. In the Google, you can find sometimes you find some manuscript from Ecodices, for example, that haven't it hasn't a public access for metadata, but in Google.
you find, yes.
In a way, this is an answer to this point about, you know, that the data should be being put up there and pulling people towards it. In a way, that model works quite well if you're dealing with something like a conventional research library at the object level. But if you want to go below that to the data contained within the objects, that's when you need this kind of system.
I think, but I'm improving in this.
You see, why I asked this question was that even in the British Library, I wouldn't know how to look myself. I mean, I can see the situation from the other side. I would love to say, well, here's a list of all the things we have, as in you can refer to them using this string, and you can subscribe maybe to a feed that tells you when something is open. But you need those names, don't you? Do you need identifiers? Does that make sense? If a certain Pali manuscript is digitized, you need one way of referring or searching for that manuscript. That doesn't make necessary that you go to the website and look for it. Does that make sense?
Sorry, can you repeat me? Thank you. Sorry for my bad English.
Sto dicendo praticamente che tu hai bisogno, comunque quando si dice del nome qualcosa, hai bisogno di dargli un nome, cioè un identifier, un ID, senza dover andare nel browser a cercare qualcosa. Cioè ci dovrebbe comunque essere un modo di dare, di identificarlo.
Sì, quando sei dentro al database. Yes, when you are in the specific database, it's simple to find the manuscript because I know the shelf mark, I know. But when I am out from sight, it's quite difficult to find out.
But if there was a unique identifier for a manuscript, you could search even with your Google and find whether there's something on the manuscript if there was a unique identifier.
Ah,
okay. No, what I'm saying is then there's no ID yet, and that is the problem.
Yeah, okay.
And
yes.
That, again, is the job
yes,
of the holders, isn't
absolutely.
It? That's your job.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was just thinking about a project. No, I was thinking, I mean, because what's really interesting is the possibility of sort of mutual enrichment. And when we do the Sherard notebooks, we can develop a protocol whereby you make the stuff available, the other person then comes along and largely automatically enriches your data so that your record, your end, is getting richer all the time. Because everybody's time somebody goes to one of those manuscripts and uses the small item that is only on folio 180 and is of no interest to anybody else, so nobody's looked at it. But the scholar who finds that particular... If you use manuscripts in the British Library, at the beginning of the book, there's a thing which says, do please tell us when you publish something about this. And you always think,
I bet.
How many people actually get back in touch and say, I've now published 3 readings from your rather nasty manuscript? They don't do it. But no, there's no excuse for not doing that. So that there should be this mutual benefit of ever richer catalogues enriched by the hunters who've gone out and who are doing their own work and pulling the stuff out and then putting it back again. So that's the project. That's what we need to demonstrate.
Yeah. Can I ask one last question before I can then I shut up? Because I think, what would you ideally want from an institution like the British Library? What would be ideal for your purposes? Apart from that, yes, we have digitized it, let's assume. It's somewhere available via the internet. What? How would you want to find it, ideally?
Un'idea.
Come vorresti tu, come user della British Library, sei interessato a manoscritti che hanno? Come vorresti che ti presentassero le informazioni?
Yeah, I think the British Library is quite good catalog. But
perhaps at a disadvantage. We all know you see if one works in the British Library, perhaps you don't. Maybe you figure out one works in the British Library on digitization of manuscripts.
Yeah.
But for example,
no, I find a lot of I have a lot of link to with the M for British Library, but I find usually only the description, the catalog description of manuscript, because in my case the manuscript doesn't the artistic interest, and so they aren't part of illuminated manuscript collection. But every manuscript from British Library has some information about in the catalog online at the moment. But I used for the moment two collections, I think, Arleys and Latin manuscript.
But in the perfect world, you'd like to know that Linda had linked to your manuscript description, so that when you digitize that manuscript, an automated message goes back and nudges her and says, hi, we've digitized this manuscript now. You linked to us.
Yes.
And now...
I'd like.
And you want to, that process to
I'd like.
But you want that process to be an automated process, don't you? Everybody who has expressed interest in this manuscript is going to receive
a feed. Yes.
Yeah.
Is it?
That's marketing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like Amazon. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think the library lack the RDF architecture. But I think the architecture of digital libraries are quite old. They born before the RDF and Web.2, no? I think this is the problem. And so now the items to follow for the libraries is many. So I can't ask at every libraries of Europe to adapt. So I try to.
But you could say, I'm doing this. Would that be of interest, the institution, adopting that scheme of doing things?
Yeah.
You could do that. Then goes the marketing, constructing a.
They need to see the advantage to them.
Yes.
Impact.
Contact them and tell them how it will increase their impact.
And ask them for the modifications that they may think of. But in other words, before you've finished your study, say, this is what I'm doing at this point. Are you interested in it? And what changes would you suggest from your point of view?
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
You sell it to them that they're getting free marketing.
Yes.
Because nowadays they all need that.
Free marketing.
Like this sort of thing.
Yeah, just like that. Absolutely. Free marketing. You have to sell it. It's a hard sell. Yeah.
Okay.
And it constructs a whole universal scholarship, doesn't it? Across Europe.
Well, I think if we could show our appreciation again to Linda, please.
Yeah.